Thank you, Robert Mankoff, cartoon editor of the New Yorker magazine, because every week you cast aside comedy gold from your all-star staff of cartoonists. And where do they go when you so cruelly reject their offerings? They come on trotting down the road to the Bryant Park Project. So returning for another round of the BPP's New Yorker Rejects is Matthew Diffie, New Yorker cartoonist and editor of the Rejection Collection. So we're going to start with you today. Although you've brought some partners in crime, will you introduce the group?
Over here is David Cypress.
Hi.
And this is Paul Noth.
Hello.
All right. So your first cartoon has a biblical theme. Let's listen.
One figure, his back to the viewer, hands in pockets, is looking at a graffiti message spray-painted on the wall. It says, John 3:16. The other figure is holding a can of spray paint. The caption reads, I just ask myself, what would Jesus spray paint?
Jesus as a vandal.
Yeah.
Well, biblically, I guess he kind of was. He went into the temple. He turned over tables.
Yeah, sure. Shaking things up a bit. Yeah, you see the John 3:16 spray painted all over, and you wonder what the justification or what the, you know, what the rationale behind somebody vandalizing with this message, this good message, but in a bad way. I'm making it sound deeper than it is.
I wouldn't know because I'm Jewish.
So. Yeah, yeah. Well, there's this thing called the Bible, and it has verses.
They invented it.
Yeah, I guess so. Right. Yeah.
Is this that other Bible besides the first one?
Yeah, it's the plus than more than five books version.
So what is John 3:16? I didn't look it up before I came in. I guess
actually do know it because I'm a good Baptist boy.
Please tell us.
For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son that whosoever shall believe in him shall not perish but have eternal life. I learned that when I was three.
So basically, what would Jesus spray paint? He'd tag his own story? Is that what you're
saying? Yeah, probably. Probably. If he had a limited amount of wall space,
right,
he would probably go with that one,
That's pretty much Jesus rules. That's what he's saying.
I with a rule. Z.
Right.
Did you see somebody wearing one of the bracelets, the What Would Jesus Do bracelets?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think all of us have probably done some sort of a What Would Jesus something gag. I mean, that's what we do. We hear a phrase that people are talking about or something that's out there, and we tweak it, you know, for comic effect. And, you know, I've seen a lot of Leo Cullum actually has a cartoon in the second volume of the Rejection Collection of it's the Last Supper. And one of the guys is asking a waiter, he's saying, what did Jesus order? So it's territory we've all gone down.
Have either of you gone down the What Would Jesus Fill in the Blank?
I never have, but I think after this I'm going to run home and do
now
a whole bunch of them.
Yes.
And I'll get mine in the New York.
Yeah.
Religious humor, is that not their thing?
I don't know. I've sold some, well, I guess it's about religion, but maybe this one's too specific. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I don't think you can name the Son of God in a New Yorker cartoon.
Maybe not. That's the line.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, David, we're going to talk about yours next. I'm not sure what to make of it, but maybe it'll become clear after this.
The scene is a ship powered by two rows of slaves. One of the slaves looks up at his bare-chested master, wide-eyed, and asks, what's a guy got to do to get whipped around here? The overlord's attire bears striking resemblance to modern S&M garb.
Wow.
Is that an accurate portrayal of your work?
It's far more elaborate than I could have imagined, but really a wonderful rendition, yeah.
Now, is the overlord supposed to have a little S&M get up on?
Well, there are kinds of cartoons that we call cliches. There are certain scenes that repeat over and over and over in the New Yorker cartoons over the history of the magazine, and one of them is the slave ship, and there have been all kinds of gags done about it. I was concerned that nobody ever focused on the fact that there's an actual S&M situation going on, and I felt it was my job to point that out. So,
is that always been your first reaction to this classic setup?
I like to look for the things that are just right there, but nobody usually sees because they're more concerned with what the people are saying. And also, when I see a whip, I have to.
Have you ever gotten a cartoon in the New Yorker that did contain a whip?
Yes, I have, actually. The exact same scene, exactly the same. But the same guy is looking up at the master saying, are we there yet?
So, this one's better, I think.
I think
but
this one's
probably worse for the New Yorker.
Yeah,
I see why
yeah.
they, they chose that.
And again, picks up on Matthew's theme of a common phrase, a common saying, put in an absurd situation. All right, Paul, we're going to take a look at yours, or I should take a listen at, to yours. It's a well-known chain restaurant where I hear the food's pretty good.
I hear, yeah.
Let's listen.
Two scantily clad waitresses are carrying pitchers of beer and a tray of food through a restaurant. They appear to be working at Hooters. One waitress says to the other, "I would never do full nudity unless the menu really called for it."
First of all, you been to a Hooters?
Oh, I've heard about them. Actually, I have once. I've been to a Hooters once.
And did that make such an impression on you that you knew one day you would draw a cartoon about Hooters?
No, I never thought that I would. I think this one probably came from the idea of an actress doing a, you know, saying that I wouldn't do nudity unless it was, you know, wasn't gratuitous and it was part of, you know, the script really called for it, you know. And so I've somehow applied it to Hooters. I have no idea why.
We've talked about on this show and several times about how you cartoonists submit 10 cartoons. When you submitted this one, what did you think the chances were, this Hooters cartoon?
I was actually hoping that they would, that they'd buy this one. But then afterwards, it's kind of like, well, I guess, you know, the New Yorker and Hooters can't really exist in the same universe, you know? It's just not something that they want to acknowledge, I think, so.
Do you actually have, does it say Hooters on the shirt and stuff?
Not quite, but it's pretty clear that's what it is.
Yeah. Well, if Hooters were a big advertiser for the magazine, perhaps that would work.
So that could still
I
happen.
I wonder is Hooters a big advertiser in the New Yorker?
It's very close. You kind of left off the H.
Right.
Or
exactly.
The girl's chest is so large that the H is obscured.
It's on the other side of the earth, so to speak.
Hooters.
They're at Hooters. Matthew, do they shy away from cartoons that have name brands? Is that an issue? Have you noticed?
I don't know for sure. I think sometimes it does have to do with the advertising stuff. Is that you guys' understanding?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That is what it has to do with.
Sometimes it's a good thing, I think, even.
Yeah. Have you been able to ever slip an advertiser in or some sort of product in?
I did one that was, you know, up the street we had the Algonquin Round Table, which is famous for its literary
Dorothy
circle.
Parker.
Exactly. So I did one of, I don't know if I'm going to remember which hotel I chose to use, but the hotel I chose to use, it was a bunch of redneck sort of comedians, like with hats that said "Kiss My Bass" and Garth Brooks tour shirts, and so it was the uncelebrated comics. I shouldn't be started this story. I don't remember this caption.
I do.
I do remember
it. I think it was the Radisson Round Table.
The Radisson Round Table. But the idea was that there was a lower level of humor being done. And then it turned out that they were an advertiser.
Oops.
And are no longer an advertiser. I understand.
Oh, wow. I did a Starbucks one. That's easy to get in there.
Yeah.
Two people in a Starbucks, and the guy's saying, "Are we in this Starbucks or the one down the street?"
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, I remember that one. When you, Paul, do these cartoons, is it does the slug line come first or the picture? I know that's such an obvious question, but I'm curious.
If it's an image first, I still write it down before I draw it. So usually I'm writing down words before I'm drawing.
How about for you, Matthew?
Yeah, it's always the words first.
Sort of half and half for me.
So you sometimes draw a drawing and then think of something funny for one of the
I give myself my own caption contest. I look at a drawing and try to come up with a caption. Yeah.
Finally, do you guys ever enter that caption contest in the back of the magazine under a
We're not
pseudonym?
Allowed to.
Yeah.
That doesn't have to stop you just because you're not allowed to.
I actually force myself not to go down that path because then I'm writing a caption, spending time writing a caption that I can't really use. But David, you do it, right? Part of your writing process, you don't?
Oh no, I never enter that contest.
No, I mean just as a sort of a writing warm up.
I do that.
Yeah. I do that too. In fact, I did one that that I sold, and it was actually a similar picture to the one to Arnie Levin's, and it hasn't run yet, so I won't say what it was.
We should publish a book of our captions to the caption contest.
Yeah. There you go.
It'd probably be anticlimactic, though. We're not that funny.
I think you're pretty funny. Matthew, Paul, and David, thanks for sharing your rejected cartoons.
Thank you.
Thanks.
We are taking a look back at people who had a very good year in 2007, and today, Khalif Hassanah from the New York Times talks about the very good year Lil Wayne is having. This is the Bryant Park Project from NPR News.